The recording. Okay. All right. We're still talking about Abraham. We're in chapter 18 of Genesis. And I thought we were going to be able to bury Abraham this week, but I don't think we're going to make it. Because there are some very interesting stories that will happen in today's study. And we're going to dive deep into those stories. So I don't think we'll... we may bury Sarah, but we're not going to get to bury Abraham quite yet. All right. In chapter 18 of Genesis, by this time in the narrative, Abraham is still a work in progress. He's learning to be obedient to God and listen to God, but he's made some mistakes along the way. All right. So here we have the promise of a son in chapter 18, verse 1. The Lord appeared to him by the oaks of Mamre as he sat at the door of his tent in the heat of the day. Now, what's going on? Way back in chapter 13, verse 18, that's where Abraham settled, at the oaks of Mamre. So this is some place in the Holy Land. And he's sitting by the door of his tent in the heat of the day. It's noon. He's in the desert. It's this arid climate. It's hot. And he's chilling out and taking a break from all of the work that he has as a shepherd. He lifted his eyes and looked, and behold, three men stood in front of him. And when he saw them, he ran from the tent door to meet them and bowed himself to the earth and said, "My Lord, if I have found favor in your sight, do not pass by your servant. Let a little water be brought and wash your feet and rest yourselves under the tree while I fetch a morsel of bread that you may refresh yourselves. And after that you may pass on since you have come to your servant." So they said, "Do as you have said." Okay. Three guys show up. He says, in ancient hospitality, let me get a morsel of bread. Well, he's going to do more than that. And this is not just three ordinary men. They said, as I have said. So, let's see, verse 6. Abraham hastened into the tent to Sarah and said, "Make ready quickly three measures of fine meal, knead it and make cakes." Well, that's the bread. And Abraham ran to the herd and took a calf, tender and good, and gave it to his servant, who hastened to prepare it. Talk about making a meal from scratch. He's going to his flock, slicing the throat of a calf and preparing this thing. And the three men are going to be famished, right? Anyway, he took curds and milk and the calf which he had prepared and set it before them, and he stood by them under the tree while they ate. He's just waiting on these guys. He's serving them, right? Maybe not yet. Maybe not yet. But he's going to. Now, Moses is writing this tale, right? Listen to what Moses said in verse 9. They said to him, "Where is Sarah, your wife?" And he said, "She's in the tent." "The Lord said, I will surely return to you in the spring, and Sarah, your wife, will have a son." Note the Lord is in that special font that says, this is Yahweh. That's the tetragrammaton. What does yours say?
Then one said.
Then one said. Oh, okay. So this is a difference in translation. The RSV CE, my Revised Standard Edition, has the Lord. So this is probably a more faithful translation, because I seriously doubt the translators would put the tetragrammaton in the text where it doesn't belong. Remember what I mean by the tetragrammaton? That's the four letters that stood in place for the name of God, for Yahweh, because Jews would never say Yahweh, because that's the holy name. They're not going to say it. So they put this four-letter abbreviation for I am who am, Yahweh. Right? So Moses, who's writing this, is clearly identifying these three visitors as God. Now, this is a prefigurement of the Blessed Trinity. God shows up in three persons. Now, Jews reading this would never have got that, right? Okay, so Yahweh says, "I will surely return to you in the spring, and Sarah, your wife, will have a son." And Sarah was listening at the tent door behind him. Now Abraham and Sarah were old, advanced in age, and it had ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of women. Now, this is, of course, a euphemism. She's gone through menopause, right? She's an old woman. All right, so Sarah laughed to herself, "After I have grown old and my husband is old, shall I have pleasure?" Now, that's the pleasure of childbirth, is what that is. All right? Because, yeah. The Lord said to Abraham, does it say one of them? It says the Lord. The Lord. Okay. So clearly, this is God. Yeah?
But you go back up at the top when it says, he said, that's on verse 3, my Lord, I shall find favor with you. He referred to him as my Lord.
Yeah, that it's not capitalized, though. So, at least in my copy. So that would just be sir, or a sign of respect.
Yeah.
So, Lord is this overused term. Sometimes it's God Almighty, Yahweh. Sometimes it's just a sign of respect, like the knights. Knights in shining armor would call each other Lord all the time. Yeah, yes. Okay. Verse 12, Sarah laughed. 13, the Lord said to Abraham, why did Sarah laugh and say, shall I indeed bear a child now that I'm old? See, that clarifies her comment about pleasure, right? Is anything too hard for the Lord? At the appointed time, I will return to you in the spring, and Sarah shall have a son. But Sarah denied it. I did not laugh, for she was afraid. And he said, no, you laughed. All right. This is interesting. She's going to have a son. The name of that son will be Isaac, which means laughter. The name of the son will be her sin. Of doubting God and laughing and scoffing at this idea, right? So every time she calls her son, laughter, she's going to remember this time in the tent. All right. Okay. Pardon?
They believe in eternal punishment.
Yeah, that's right. Well, yeah, sometimes it's a reminder, a good reminder. Yeah. Okay. 16. The men set out from there, and they looked towards Sodom. Sodom. And Abraham went with them to set them on their way. And the Lord said, does it say Lord in your... Okay, so clearly this is in the original text, this was Yahweh, right? Okay. So this is God talking to Abraham. The Lord said, shall I hide from Abraham what I am about to do, seeing that Abraham shall become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall bless themselves by him? No, for I have chosen him that he may charge his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing righteousness and justice, so that the Lord may bring to Abraham what he has promised. This is the internal dialogue of God. This is his own thoughts. How do we know this? Well, because Moses is writing this down after the fact. Moses is writing this down after an extremely long dialogue, sitting face to face with God and writing. Right, so we've got it on good authority. This isn't just speculation at this point. That's really what's happening. Remember, this is written during the Exodus when Moses is visiting with God. And we'll see, after his conversations with God, Moses comes out of the tent with his face is radiant, and he has to veil his face because it freaks everybody out. Right, so presumably, this is when this conversation was recorded between God and Moses. Okay. Verse 20. Then the Lord said, because the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great and their sin is very grave, I will go down to see whether they have done altogether according to the outcry which has come to me, and if not, I will know. Well, he knows already, but he's going to go check it out for himself because surely it can't be that bad. But turns out it is. So the men turned from there and went towards Sodom, but Abraham still stood before the Lord, and he's going to argue. Abraham drew near and said, will you indeed destroy the righteous with the wicked? Suppose there are 50 righteous within the city. Will you then destroy the place and not spare it for the 50 righteous who are in it? Far be it from you to do such a thing, to slay the righteous with the wicked, so that the righteous fare as the wicked. Far be it from you. Shall not the judge of all the earth do right? This is really challenging. I don't know. We don't speak to God like this, right? We're more deferential. But really, he's a big boy. He can take it. If you want to argue with God, it's okay. He's not going to get his feelings hurt. We can't be disrespectful, but this is evidence that, you know, even the patriarchs could push the boundaries a bit. Like, if you're mad at God, just let him have it. The Lord said, if I find at Sodom 50 righteous in the city, I will spare the whole place for their sake. Abraham answered, Behold, I have taken upon myself to speak to the Lord. Who am I but dust and ashes? Suppose 5 of the 50 righteous are lacking. Will you destroy the whole city for lack of 5? And he said, I will not destroy it if I find 45 there. Again, he spoke to him, Suppose there are 40. And he answered, For the sake of the 40, I will not do it. In verse 30. And he said, Oh, let the Lord not be angry, and I will speak. Suppose 30 are found there. He answered, I will not do it if I find 30 there. Verse 31. He said, Behold, I have taken upon myself to speak to the Lord. Now he's starting to pull back and say, Oh, I'm but a sinner. I'm so small. After really reading God the Riot Act, right? Suppose 20 are found there. He answered, For the sake of the 20, I will not destroy it. Then he said, Oh, let the Lord not be angry. I will speak again, but this once. Suppose 10 are found there. He said, For the sake of the 10, I will not destroy it. And the Lord went his way when he had finished speaking to Abraham, and Abraham returned to his place. So this sort of bartering with God. This is a very early case of intercessory prayer. So as we remember the dead in this month of November, it's good that this goes back to the Old Testament. This is Abraham interceding for people that he knows are sinners and interceding for the righteous amongst the sinners, right? Okay. Chapter 19. The two angels came to Sodom in the evening. This is no longer Yahweh. It's no longer the triune God, the three persons talking with Abraham. These are two angels. This is a different group, right? So reset. Two angels come to Sodom, and Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. When Lot saw them, he rose to meet them, bowed himself to the face of the earth, and said, My lords, turn aside, I pray you, to your servant's house, and spend the night, and wash your feet. Then you may rise up early and go on your way. They said, No, we will spend the night in the street. And he urged them strongly, so they turned aside to him and entered his house. And he made them a feast and baked unleavened bread, and they ate. But before they lay down, the men of the city, the men of Sodom, both young and old, all the people to the last man, surrounded the house, and they called to Lot, Where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us so that we may know them. Okay, these men do not want to play checkers and have a philosophical discussion. This is a euphemism of knowing in the Bible. It used to know intimately, sexually, all the men, to the last, young and old. This description is not safe for children. All right, so he's gone. Okay, because this is going to get wicked. This is worse than a soap opera. Lot went out the door to the men, and you say, well, maybe they do just want to get to know them and, you know, experience the far-flung corners of the empire, whatever, and have a conversation. Lot went out the door to the men, shut it after him, and said, I beg you, my brothers, do not act so wickedly. Right? They're not talking about philosophy and checkers. Behold, I have two daughters who have not known man. Let me bring them out to you and do to them as you please. Only do nothing to these men, for they have come under the shelter of my roof. As if his daughters are not in the shelter of his roof. Lot does not get the award for best dad ever. Okay, he's sending his virgin daughters out into the street to be molested by the entire city of men. And the angels step in here and say, this is not going to happen. They're not going to let that happen. Verse 9, but they said, stand back. And they said, this fellow came to sojourn, and he would play the judge? Now we will deal worse with you than with them. And they pressed hard against the man Lot and drew near to break the door. But the men put forth their hands, the men, these are the two angels, right? Those men put forth their hands and brought Lot into the house to them and shut the door. And they struck with blindness the men who were at the door of the house, both small and great, so that they wearied themselves groping for the door. So everyone is safe. And the wicked men of Sodom are going to go to bed unsatisfied and blind. So these men said to Lot, this is the angels, not the men outside. These are the angels, said to Lot, have you anyone else here, sons-in-laws, daughters, or anyone you have in the city? Bring them out of the place, for we are about to destroy this place, because the outcry against its people has become great before the Lord, and the Lord has sent us to destroy it. So Lot went out and said to his sons-in-laws, who were to marry his daughters, and how do you think they feel about what has just happened, right? And this is just disturbed. Up! Get out of this place, for the Lord is about to destroy the city. But he seemed to his son-in-laws to be jesting. When morning dawned, right, the angels have been, this is the middle of the night. The angels say, let's go, we're about to destroy the city. Everybody goes to bed. Right, that's not stated, but that's what happened. When morning dawned, the angels urged Lot, saying, arise, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, lest you be consumed in the punishment of the city. But he lingered. So the men seized him and his wife and his two daughters by the hand, the Lord being merciful to him and extremely patient, I might add. And they brought him forth and set him outside the city. And when they had brought them forth, they said, flee for your life. Do not look back or stop anywhere in the valley. Flee to the hills. That's the command. Flee to the hills, lest you be consumed. And Lot.
Why did he pick Lot? Why is he so good to Lot?
Because Abraham is on Abraham's behalf. Abraham pleaded for the righteous in the city. Now, is Lot righteous? Lot has just demonstrated he's not righteous. But God is being merciful to Abraham by sparing Lot. So intercessory prayer works to a point, right? God will show mercy when we beg for mercy. That's a very good question. Why Lot? He doesn't deserve it. But neither do we, right? So, okay. Of course, we're not about to set our kids out to be molested by a mob either. I mean, let's get serious. Maybe he was the most righteous. Yeah, exactly right. He might have been. Even though, you know, he lingered, he's catching the last 10 minutes of the game instead of doing what he's supposed to do. Okay, flee to the hills, lest you be consumed. And Lot said to them, oh, my lords, behold, your servant has found favor in your sight, and you have shown me great kindness in saving my life. Doesn't that sound pious? But I cannot flee to the hills, lest the disaster overtake me, and I die. Behold, yonder city is near enough to flee to, and it is a little one. Let me escape there. Is it not a little one? And my life will be saved. So Lot is bargaining with these angels in the same way that Abraham did. But Lot doesn't have the chops to do this. Right? He's not really, he's just selfish and lazy. He's not magnanimous. He's not begging for others. This is not intercessory. This is whining. It's too far. Okay. He said to him, behold, I grant you this favor also, that I will not overthrow the city of which you have spoken. Make haste, escape there, for I can do nothing until you arrive there. Therefore, the name of the city was called Zoar, which I have a note that is little. It's a little city. It's called Little. Okay. So names are great in the Bible. The sun had risen on the earth when Lot came to Zoar. Then the Lord rained on Sodom and Gomorrah brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven, and he overthrew those cities and all the valley and all the inhabitants of the cities and what grew on the ground. But Lot's wife behind him looked back, and she became a pillar of salt. So she's pining for the life they're leaving behind. She looks back. Either literally she looked back, or in her heart she yearned for what she was leaving behind. And God said, nope, I am not saving that, right? If you're still drawn to this city of sin, you're not going to make it out of here alive. So there is a pillar of salt called Lot's wife. It's this pillar of salt right next to the Dead Sea. Now, so is really Lot's wife? I don't know. But when people were making maps and they're wandering around, there's this big pillar of salt right next to where they think Sodom and Gomorrah were, and they named it Lot's wife because, hey, it matches the story, right? So also in the Dead Sea, they have found the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah as they put desalinization plants on the Dead Sea to water the fields of Israel and Jordan. The water in the Dead Sea is being used up. It's lowering. And lo and behold, there's a city down there underwater in what used to be a valley. And turns out that city was destroyed. And archaeologists have said, oh yeah, it was destroyed by a heat event. Wow. So the rocks apparently are a little melted. So it takes a lot of heat to melt rocks. It's not a naturally occurring sort of thing. Warfare did not, because you can't like burn wood and melt a rock. Almost like fire and brimstone fell from the sky for this thing. Okay. Anyway, just an interesting side note. Where am I? 27. Yes. Verse 27. And Abraham went early in the morning to the place where he had stood before the Lord, and he looked down on Sodom and Gomorrah and toward all the land of the valley, and behold, the smoke of the land went up like the smoke of a furnace. So all he sees is simmering ruins. So it was that when God destroyed the city of the valley, God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow when he overthrew the cities in which Lot dwelt. There's your answer of why Lot. Because he's remembering Abraham. Yes, Lot is the nephew of Abraham, his brother's son. Remember, that was the brother Haran that died on the journey from Ur of the Chaldeans. The old man got tired and went, boom, I'm planting myself and I'm going to name the place Haran after my dead son. So, yeah, Lot is his son. This isn't Haran's son. Haran is Abraham's brother. Okay. Verse 30, Lot went up out of Zoar and dwelt in the hills with his two daughters, for he was afraid to dwell in Zoar, so he dwelt in a cave with his two daughters. I don't know why he was afraid to dwell in the land, in the city that he demanded he be let. Let me go there. Well, now, that's not good enough. He's going to the hills, finally, where God said, go, right? And the firstborn, so these are the two daughters, and they're living in a cave with their dad. And the firstborn said to the younger, our father is old, and there is not a man on earth to come into us after the manner of all the earth. Is that a true statement? This is the only man on the planet? I mean, no, that is not a true statement. But this is the thinking of someone raised in Sodom and Gomorrah. They're depraved. Come, let us make our father drink wine, and we may lie with him, that we may preserve offspring through our father. So they made their father drink wine that night, and the firstborn went in and lay with her father, and he did not know when she lay down or when she arose. On the next day, the firstborn said to the younger, behold, I lay last night with my father. Let us make him drink wine tonight also, that you may go in and lie with him, that we may preserve offspring with our father. So they made their father drink wine that night also, and the younger arose and lay with him, and he did not know 36. Thus both of the daughters of Lot were with child by their father. The first bore a son, called his name Moab. He is the father of the Moabites to this day. The younger also bore a son and called his name Ben-Ami, which he is the father of the Ammonites to this day. Now, it turns out, if you were a Jew reading this story and you had just migrated from Egypt into the Holy Land, you would be fighting tooth and nail the Moabites and the Ammonites every day. These are the mortal enemies of the people of Israel as they come out of Egypt. They're dogged constantly on their journey by the Moabites and Ammonites. And those two groups have this very unsavory beginning. All right. Chapter 20. The ugliness is over. From there, Abraham journeyed toward the city of the territory of the Negev and dwelt between Kadesh and Shur, and he journeyed in Gerar. And Abraham said of Sarah his wife, "She is my sister." Wait, what? Abraham, you did this before in Egypt. Now you're doing it in Gerar. I don't know where Gerar is, but it's the same old trick. And Abimelech, the king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. But God came to Abimelech in a dream by night, and he said, "Behold, you are a dead man because of the woman whom you have taken, for she is a man's wife." Now Abimelech had not approached her, so he said, "Lord, will you slay an innocent people?" Same argument back that, okay? Yeah. Will you kill the innocent with the guilty? Did he not himself say to me, "She is my sister"? And she herself said, "He is my brother. In the integrity of my heart and the innocence of my hands, I have done this." Then God said to him in a dream, "Yes, I know that you have done this in the integrity of your heart. And it was I who kept you from sinning against me. Therefore, I did not let you touch her. Now then, restore the man's wife, for he is a prophet and he will pray for you." Just like he did, he prayed for the city of Sodom and Gomorrah. He's going to pray for this group. "And you shall live, but if you do not restore, know that you shall surely die, you and all that are yours." So Abimelech rose in the morning and called his servants and told them all these things, and the men were very much afraid. Well, yeah, because this is not a good thing. Then Abimelech called Abraham and said to him, "What have you done to us? And how have I sinned against you that you have brought on me and my kingdom a great sin? You have done to me things that ought not to be done." Roger that. Abimelech is in the right here. So Abraham said, "I did it because I thought there is no fear of God in all this place, and they will kill me because of my wife." The same argument he used in Egypt. "Besides, she is indeed my sister, the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother. And she became my wife. And when God caused me..." So he's blaming... This is Adam's trick, right? God caused me to wander. He's blaming God. "God caused me to wander from my father's house. I said to her, 'This is the kindness you must do to me. At every place which we come, say of me, he is my brother.' Then Abimelech took sheep and oxen and made female and male and female slaves and gave them to Abraham and restored Sarah, his wife, to him. And Abimelech said, 'Behold, my land is before you. Dwell where it pleases you.' To Sarah, he said, 'Behold, I have given your brother 1,000 pieces of silver.'" This is like digging in, you know, it's like neener, neener, neener. Yeah. 1,000 pieces of silver. It is your vindication in the eyes of all who are with you, and before everyone you are righted." Abraham prayed to God, and God healed Abimelech and also healed his wife and female slaves so that they bore children, for the Lord had closed all the wombs of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. That wasn't mentioned in the beginning of the story. Abraham just travels down there, lies again with his old tricks, and it turns into a blessing for the people of Abimelech. All right. Why? Yeah, another... Why do bad people get good things? That's the nature of God. Bad people get good things. And good people get bad things. Right? I mean, why do good people get cancer? I mean, this happens today. It's called the problem of evil. The opposite is the same thing. Why do blessings happen on bad people? The only thing I can say about that is they'll get their just rewards in the end. So judgment isn't over. Judgment isn't for the here and now. It's for the afterlife. So what we do in the here and now, how we react to the world around us, is not our reward in heaven. It's not our reward here on earth. We receive our reward in heaven. And Abimelech, I mean, nobody. Abimelech was just and right. So there's nothing wrong with Abimelech.
But, Abraham.
Oh, Abraham. Yeah, he's a work in progress. But we're all a work in progress. Yeah. Abraham, God keeps blessing Abraham. And Abraham still, right, just lets him down over and over again. But we do the same.
Right?
Gad never gives up on Abraham. And we'll get to God testing Abraham at the end of today. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So we'll get to the test of Abraham. And Abraham is going to eventually pass this test with flying colors, and it's just going to surprise you. Okay. So Isaac is born in chapter 21. The Lord visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did to Sarah as he promised, and Sarah conceived and bore Abraham a son in his old age at the time which God had spoken to him. Abraham called the name of his son who was born to him, whom Sarah bore him, Isaac. So they're very explicit now. This is Abraham's son who Sarah bore, because Abraham has a son, but not by his wife. Remember that. So the author here, Moses and the Holy Spirit, is being explicit. This is what God said. This is very explicit that this is not a son by another woman. This is a son by Sarah, which was God's promise. So, and she's an old woman. Which this is a miraculous birth. Abraham circumcised his son Isaac when he was 8 days old, as God had commanded. So now he's starting to follow the command, right? Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. And Sarah said, God has made laughter for me. Everyone who hears will laugh over me. There's the term laughter again. And she said, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would suckle children? Yet I have borne a son in his old age. Hagar and Ishmael are sent away next in verse 8. As the child grew and he was weaned, Abraham made a great feast on the day that Isaac was weaned. Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, whom she had borne to Abraham, playing with her son Isaac. So Ishmael is playing with Isaac, and it makes Sarah angry. So polygamy never works in the Bible. It's always problematic. So she said to Abraham in verse 10, cast out this woman with her son, for the son of the slave woman shall not be heir with my son Isaac. The thing was very displeasing to Abraham on account of his son, on account of Ishmael. Yeah. But God said to Abraham, be not displeased because of the lad, because of your slave woman. Whatever Sarah says to you, do as she tells you, for through Isaac shall your descendants be named. And I will make a nation of the son of the slave woman also, because he is your offspring. So Abraham rose early in the morning, took bread and a skin of water, gave it to Hagar, putting it on her shoulder along with the child, and sent her away. She departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba, which hasn't even been named yet, but we'll get to that later. When the water ran out, in verse 15, she cast the child under one of the bushes. Then she went, sat down over against him a good way off, about the distance of a bow shot, which is pretty far. She said, let me not look upon the death of my child. And she sat over against him and wept. God heard the voice of the lad, and the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, what troubles you? Stupid question, right? Fear not, God has heard the voice of the lad where he is. Arise, lift up the lad, and hold him fast with your hand, for I will make him a great nation. God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water. What well? Beersheba. That's the well they saw. That's where she is, right? And filled the skin with water. She gave the lad a drink, and God was with the lad. He grew up. He lived in the wilderness and became an expert with the bow. He lived in the wilderness of Paran, and his mother took a wife for him from the land of Egypt. Again, this is the beginning of, traditionally, this is the beginning of the nations that will eventually become Islam. Not until about 600 years after the birth of Christ, but
so
this is the people.
Right,
totally pagan. Totally pagan. Yeah. In fact, their religion, the one true God, is quickly forgotten, even by the Jews, to be frank. So the people that are not constantly reminded of God's mercy and forgiveness quickly resort to paganism. And when Muhammad shows up on the scene in the 4th, 5th century in Saudi Arabia, the first thing he does is he goes to Mecca and he kicks down all the pagan idols, because they're pagans. They're thoroughly pagans. And then he gives them the option. Freedom of religion for Islam is you can convert or you can die. You have the choice. Free will. If you're a Jew or a Christian, you're a monotheist, you can stick with that, but you have to pay a tax. It's called the Dhimmi tax. So the Christians in the Islamic land, like Iraq and Iran and Pakistan, they have been under constant persecution and a 10% tax. So they tithe to the government for staying Christian. Those are people of very strong faith because they've been in persecution for over 1,000 years. All right. This is interesting. Abraham and Abimelech make a covenant. Remember, Abimelech is the guy that Abraham lied to. We're in verse 22. At the time, Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of his army, said to Abraham, God is with you in all that you do. Now therefore swear to me by God that you will not deal falsely with me or with my offspring or with my posterity, my kids, but as I have dealt loyally with you, you deal with me and the land where you have sojourned. And Abraham said, I will swear. Basically, Abimelech is saying, don't lie to me again, because you've lied to me before. So when Abraham complained to Abimelech about a well of water which Abimelech's servants had seized, Abimelech said, I do not know. Who has done this thing? You did not tell me, and I have not heard of it until today. So Abraham took sheep and oxen and gave them to Abimelech. This is interesting. And the two men made a covenant. That's one. Abraham set 7 ewe lambs from the flock. 7 covenant, right? And Abimelech said to Abraham, what is the meaning of these 7 ewe lambs which you have set apart? He said, these 7 ewe lambs you will take from my hand, that you may be a witness for me that I dug this well. Therefore, the place was called Beersheba, because there both of them swore an oath. So they made a covenant at Beersheba. Be'er, B-E-apostrophe-E-R, is well, and Sheba is 7. So I have a little note J, at the bottom. It says, that is the well of 7, or well of the oath. So I've been saying 7 and covenant are interchangeable, and here it is in the name of a well. Now, this was the well that Hagar had discovered, because that's the place where she was dwelling, right? All right. Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of his army, rose up and returned to the land of the Philistines. Abraham planted a tamarisk tree in Beersheba and called there on the name of the Lord, the everlasting God. And Abraham sojourned many days in the land of the Philistines. He's still not owning the land. That was verse 33. When Abraham planted a tamarisk tree in Beersheba. But Beersheba is named in verse 31. Therefore, that place was called Beersheba, the well of the covenant, or the well of 7. Same thing, yes.
Okay, I have a couple of questions.
Okay.
Why is Moses writing this, making such a big deal out of a well?
Like, okay.
And then I read something the other day about how contracts and covenants are not interchangeable. That covenant is a family relationship.
Yes.
what time zones that people are serving?
Yes, that's what he's doing. So the question is, what's the big deal about a well? And the second is the difference between a contract and a covenant. Contracts are goods, exchange of goods. Covenants are an exchange of persons. So it's a solemn vow, and it's irrevocable. So Abraham and Abimelech, Abraham complains to Abimelech, look, your folks are stealing water from my well. And Abimelech says, well, I didn't know about it until now. So Abraham proposes this covenant with the seven ewe lambs, and Abimelech is like, what are you doing? Valid question, because he's new to this covenant thing. He's saying, this is a covenant. I promise I won't ever lie to you again, and we're going to make a promise that is unbreakable. Now, it doesn't say they cut the animals in half and they passed through them, but it's likely they did, because that was just the way the covenant was entered into, a serious relationship. It's a kinship, true. So we're going to treat each other like family from here on out. So that's the... And I don't know why... I don't know why Beersheba is made a big deal of. I think it will show up later in the narrative. So this might be foreshadowing. Okay, chapter 22. This is huge. I'm going to read the narrative from chapter 1, from verse 1 all the way to verse 20. Through verse 19. I'm just going to read it, because it is intense. And then I'm going to back up and we're going to dive deep into some of the text. Okay? That way I don't have to stop in the middle and explain things. After these things, God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham! And he said, here I am. And he said, take your son, your only begotten son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering upon one of the mountains of which I shall tell you. So Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, and took two of his young men with him, and his son Isaac. And he cut the wood for the burnt offering, and arose and went to the place of which God had told him. On the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place afar off. Then Abraham said to his young men, stay here with the donkey, and I and the lad will go yonder and worship and come again to you. And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac his son. And he took in his hand the fire and the knife. And so they went both of them together. And Isaac said to his father Abraham, my father. And he said, here I am, my son. And he said, behold, the fire and the wood. But where is the lamb for the burnt offering? Abraham said, God will provide himself the lamb for a burnt offering, my son. So they went, both of them together. When they came to the place of which God had told him, Abraham built an altar there and laid the wood in order and bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar upon the wood. Then Abraham put forth his hand and took the knife to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, here I am. He said, do not lay your hand on the lad or do anything to him, for now I know that you fear God, seeing you have not withheld your son, your only begotten son, from me. And Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him was a ram caught in a thicket by his horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called the name of that place, the Lord will provide, as it is said to this day, on the mount of the Lord it shall be provided. And the angel of the Lord called to Abraham a second time from heaven and said, by myself I have sworn, says the Lord, because you have done this and have not withheld your son, your only begotten son, I will indeed bless you, and I will multiply your descendants as the stars of heaven, as the sand which is on the seashore. And your descendants shall possess the gates of their enemies, and by your descendants all of the nations of the earth shall bless themselves, because you have obeyed my voice. So Abraham returned to his young men, and they arose and went together to Beersheba, and Abraham dwelt at Beersheba. Okay, this test of Abraham is kind of problematic. As we read this, we think, what kind of God would ask a man to sacrifice his own son? And it's a valid question. This is a test, okay? And I'm not going to answer that question until we get all the way through. But take your son, your only begotten son. Jesus has described as the only begotten son of the Father. Is this Abraham's only son?
No.
No, it's not. But in this narrative, God is saying over and over again, your only begotten son is the only one that matters. The other kid, yeah, he's got blessings. Put him out of your mind. This is the one I'm concerned about. Abraham, and go to the land of Moriah. Where is Moriah? Go to 2 Chronicles, and I did not highlight this. 2 Chronicles chapter 3, verse 1. If you want to make a note to 2 Chronicles verse 3, chapter 3, verse 1. I'll just read it. Then this is where Solomon is going to build the temple in Jerusalem. Solomon began to build the house of the Lord in Jerusalem on Mount Moriah, where the Lord had appeared to David his father at the place where David had appointed, etc., etc. Mount Moriah is where Abraham was tested. The sacrifice of Isaac was in the exact same place that will become the temple of Jerusalem. So when the Jews go to offer sacrifice in Jerusalem, not only is the Ark of the Covenant behind the curtain, where the dwelling place of God, but it's the very place where God tested Abraham. So the Jews, when they make their sacrifice, are recalling the sacrifice of Abraham, their father in faith. Mount Moriah. It's like, how cool is that? Right? This is where they're getting it from. Okay. On the third day, God lifted his eyes, saw the place afar off. Abraham said to his young man, stay here with the donkey, and I and the lad will go yonder and worship and come again to you. Is he lying? He's got a history of lying. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 19. I'll turn to it. That's Hebrews chapter 11. Verse 19. I didn't put a ribbon there. Shame on me. By faith, this is verse 17, I'll start reading. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises was ready to offer up his only begotten son, of whom it was said, through Isaac shall your descendants be named. He considered that God was able to raise men even from the dead. Hence he did not receive him back. Hence he did receive him back, and this was a symbol. Right? So the author of Hebrews said, when Abraham ascended the mountain and told the guys with the donkey, my son and I will go worship and we will return. Abraham just believed what God had said. God had said, Isaac, through Isaac, your descendants will be numerous. So, and then God says, slay your son Isaac. Abraham went, I don't understand it, but okay. He must be able to raise people from the dead. So unflinchingly, he goes up the mountain to slay his son, telling the men, we will both return. That's the faith of Abraham. So it's not so much this sadistic God asking for the death of a man, but it's a test of his faith, and he passes this test with flying colors. Okay. Oh yeah, and I'm going to get to that. Yeah, he definitely knew what was going on. Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac his son. So you've got a young man with the wood going up a mountain. Who else took wood, maybe, I don't know, a cross, up a mountain? This Isaac is a form of Christ. He's a type of Christ. This is a prefigurement of Christ, the only begotten Son who will be sacrificed, right? And Isaac says, Dad, something's missing. I see the wood. I've got the wood. You've got the knife and the fire, but where's the lamb? And listen to this weird phrasing. It's difficult to read. I had to slow down because it's weird. He said, behold the fire and the knife. Abraham said, God will provide himself the lamb for a burnt offering. Did God provide himself as the lamb? Well, yeah. Jesus is himself the lamb for the sacrifice. But in this case, it's a weird way to say God himself will provide the sacrifice. God will provide. But you see what I mean? The phrasing is awkward, and it's translated in awkward English because it was awkward in the original language. The word order was kind of crazy. And this was written by somebody who didn't know Jesus was going to be the Lamb of God and sacrificed, but he wrote it this way because this is what the Holy Spirit said, write it this way. And the Jews read it and never read into this the Messiah will be, you know, killed by the wood, you know, that he carried up a mountain. Okay. So there he is. Abraham said, God will provide himself the lamb for burnt offering. So they went. They came to the place where God told him. Abraham built an altar, laid the wood in order, bound Isaac his son. Okay, Isaac is probably 14 years old. Abraham is 114. Do you think a 14-year-old kid could squirm away from a centurion? I mean, not a Roman centurion. I mean a man who's over 100, right? My grandfather lived to be 106. And I by 14, you know, the age difference wasn't that, it wasn't 100 years. But, yeah, I think at 106 I could take my grandpa. men of this age are not very strong. Isaac is a willing sacrifice. He's allowing himself to be bound up. And you're like, okay. So being raised by a man like Abraham, Abraham has passed his faith on to his son Isaac. Isaac was a willing sacrifice, just like Christ was a willing sacrifice. I don't know what Isaac thought, but clearly he's not going to go against his dad. He knows that this is God's plan, and he's going to trust it just like Abraham trusted it. Okay, one last thing. He stopped. Do not lay your hand on the lad or do anything. I know that you fear God, seeing you have not withheld your son, your only begotten son. Abraham lifted his eyes and looked, and behold, was a ram caught in a thicket by his horns. In other words, this sacrificial lamb is wearing a crown of thorns. Isn't that beautiful? It doesn't say that, but he's got his head stuck in a thorn bush. Jesus definitely had his head stuck in a thorn bush. Now, that thorn bush had been made into a crown by the Roman soldiers, but the symbolism it just screams, this is Christ. Okay. That's it. And here is a repetition of the three promises. Your descendants shall, in verse 17, is a repetition. See you guys. We're going to close at this. Yeah, that's fine. Is it time to go? Yeah, it's time to go. Oh, okay. I'll keep that in mind. We're going to start with chapter 23 next time. All right, thanks. But this is a repetition of the three promises. I will bless you, and I will multiply your descendants. Your descendants shall possess the gate of their enemies and the land. By your descendants, all the nations of the earth will bless themselves. So that's a repetition of the three promises that we heard. Okay, with that, we'll close. There's this little bit, the children of Nahor. It's just some kids. After these things, behold, Milcah has also borne children to your brother Nahor. This is more of the family tree, but they're not all that important. They're not part of the narrative. So we'll skip them, and we'll pick up with 23, the death and burial of Sarah. So next week, we will definitely bury Sarah and Abraham, and the story will start to go a little quicker. Is there a funeral next week?
Abraham and Sarah.
Oh, yes, that's right. We will that funeral, okay.